right, everybody, welcome back to another episode here, the Crypto 101 Podcast. I'm your host, Bryce Paul, joined as always by my notorious compadre, my best buddy, Mr. Aaron Pizzamine Malone. Aaron, how goes it?
I've been on good behavior for about 24 hours now, and it's really not all it's cracked up to be. It's time to get back to being a degen, and that's throwing risk management out the window. That's maximizing returns, maximizing pain more often than not. But man, when you get a good one, it's amazing. And there's so many new financial instruments that are coming into the crypto space to help us do more exotic things with our money, to create additional financial opportunities aside from just buy and hold and pray. But we can actually take action on stuff. But this is playing with fire. And if you're going to play with fire, you need some fire walking training. So we need to get some of that. Bryce, who we got on the show
today?
And
you need the right tools. So we're bringing on Sohan Sen, who is the institutional sales lead over at Paradigm in Asia. And so, Sohan, welcome to the Crypto 101 Podcast. How are you doing?
Very good. Thanks for having me. Excited to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. No, we're excited because Paradigm is a derivatives house, right? I mean, you guys are a marketplace for all sorts of exotic trading derivatives and options, but that doesn't nearly do the explanation justice. So before we dive in really deeply into your background and everything personally getting you to this point to lead institutional sales of a large financial institution out of Hong Kong, which you're doing currently, what is Paradigm? Let's give everybody some solid context, not to be confused with the popular American venture capital firm called Paradigm.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. So, we are a marketplace to trade derivatives, which exists on top of exchanges. So let's say you have something which is a particularly large size trade to do, or a particularly complex trade to do. To go to an exchange would not do you service, as in you would not get the best price, because you would, if your size is large, you would, destroy the order book. Or if it's a complex trade, you would have to pay, bid offer on both sides. So what we came into existence because our platform allows you to face and negotiate a trade with people OTC, individual market makers or other players, but then you clear on exchange. Right. So let's say you wanted to buy an option and sell another option. You would come to us and then we would quote you a bespoke price from a universe of market makers. And then you would trade at the best price, but then you would clear on exchange. So you don't actually have to face any extra credit risk to what you were doing by facing somebody OTC. So the most important thing for us is we are completely non-custodial. We don't touch your assets. We focus on price discovery for you using our network of, let's say about 1,000 different clients. And we focus on derivative space. So options, futures, combinations. We also are in both CeFi and DeFi. I mean, I focus on the exchange side here right now, but we also clear on the blockchain. There are many, we can go into that a bit later, but there are many DeFi protocols who use us for price discovery because our network gets them the best price on, whatever they clear on exchange.
Let me just say there's so much to dive into on the specifics there, as well as, I really want to talk about FTX as well, because I know that there was some level of partnerships on some kind of prepackaged future spreads that I think I remember reading about. So we'll talk about, just from your perspective, what went wrong and how the industry moves forward. But let's acquaint you with the audience real quick. How did you come into the crypto world? What were you doing before that?
Yeah, so before crypto, I spent about 14 years in the major investment banks. I was a structurer for for complex products, basically. So in FX and rates. So this is a very TradFi equivalent to what Paradigm does in a way, right? So in an investment bank, what happens is, a hedge fund or some other person would call in and say, look, I want a price on this complex product, right? This two options or option in the future. And I want you to quote me the best price. The bank would quote the best price, but then it would find on the other side somebody who would take, you know, to take the other side. Right. So in a way, we are an electronic version of what I was doing for 14 years. The underlying is just crypto. Right. So that's basically how the transition happened. It was an accidental transition because, in 2018, I started playing with, options in crypto, and I liked it. A lot. I thought there were many opportunities in the market. I think people were mispricing how, because it's a very early stage market. It's like, in traditional finance, these options were priced correctly 20 years ago, in my opinion. Right. And then I saw them in 2018. I was like, oh, this isn't quite exactly what it's supposed to do. I was always playing with it and trading on it. And then I was actually trading through Paradigm. That's how I know Ananda, CEO. And then, I ended up working here because it was so similar.
It kind of reminds me of in some of these movies where this guy, they're like working on the product and then they're so good at it, they beat the game. And the founder of the product is like, well, why don't you come work for me? Like you did really good on our platform. We could use a guy like you around here.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it helps to, have used the product, right? When you're a sales guy and you want to sell something, it's always good to be a user first, right? Because then you're not faking your experience in a way. Right. I guess that was a good thing.
Yeah. I think it's important for our listeners to know that there's actually three different markets that we're talking about right now that have their own prices in there. There's going to be a different Bitcoin price, whether you're looking at the spot market where most of us buy and sell Bitcoin on a Coinbase, for example, versus a futures market versus an options market, which actually includes a shifting amount of time. You're not just talking about right here and right now, you're talking about in the future. So that's really important to remember. You're kind of like trading in 3D versus just, a one-dimensional trade like most of us do. And it's important to remember, and when you're talking about complexity, somebody has to take the other side of that trade. And often when we as little retail traders we always just go under the assumption that we can buy and sell whenever we want. But if we make something that, 100 X's or 1,000 X's and all of a sudden our $10,000 is now $10 million, we have to find someone to actually give us $10 million for all that crypto, or we can't get out of that position or equities.
Yeah, there's always somebody on the other side of the trade, right? Yeah. And if you think about what Paradigm does is, correct me if I'm wrong, but it's not a house filled with a bunch of retail traders all speculating and buying call options. You're basically the place that's making the market so that if you do want to speculate on Bitcoin and say somebody wants to buy, 200,000 calls on Bitcoin, it's like you can't really go to Coinbase and do that. You can't really go anywhere to do that. You'd have to go through someone like you, right?
That's exactly right. So yeah, if you want to do a large ticket, or you want to do an out of the money ticket, right, it definitely makes sense to use us, because what we focus on is there'll be somebody out there who will make you that price, right? And that person isn't going to be showing you that price on an exchange just without being prompted, right? There needs to be some kind of negotiation. There needs to be a price request, right? So the way I would think about it is, if you want to do something which everyone trades, 10 times a day, and it's very simple, like an outright future, right? Just an outright future. Like, of course, you would go to an exchange the major exchanges. If you want to trade a massive size of that, you would, of course, come to somebody like Paradigm, right? If you want to trade like an option, or like we're something like 40% of the global crypto options volume, it's always a discussion, right? It's not always like you can't just find what you want on a screen. Like, for example, I'm very bullish, right? Like, I actually think the bottom's in. I think, the market really could rip much higher. But I have a view that Ether will go higher, but it won't go that much higher, right? So I have a view that, Ether will go, let's say, in the next 3 months, it'll go to something like 2,500, right? So right now it's about 1600. So, you know, I want to buy a call spread in 3 months, which is between 1800 and 2500, right? Which is a very specific view, right? That's a, and it gives me a lot of leverage. That's something like a 10 times, leverage trade, right?
10 to 1 if it payout. Ends up,
10 to 1 payout, yeah. So it varies depending on the market conditions, but it's somewhere between 7 to 1 and 10 to 1, right? So it's a very leveraged payout. So I pay 1, and if it gets to 2,500, I'll make somewhere between 7 times and 10 times. So if I just think about this, right? If I go to an exchange, what would I have to do? Like if I go to an options exchange, I would have to go in and buy an 1,800, then wait for a while, and then sell the 2,500, right? This is a very inefficient form of dealing this. If I call up a very large, market maker, he would definitely quote me that price, but then I would have to face him, and the guy doesn't know me, I don't know him, right? Like, I don't know what the margin's going to be, etc. But you trade through Paradigm, you do that exact same thing with that guy, but you clear it on exchange, right? Which allows you to, trade around it, not have any counterparty risk except the exchange's counterparty risk, etc. So that would be like the use case. Yeah, so the spot future and option, right? Like let's say you're a retail investor, right? Like, I mean, I very much am focused on, saying that this is for big trades or complex trades, etc. But in many of the exchanges that we go through, there is no minimum like block size. So retail investors could hypothetically use us, right? So as an example, let's say there's spot future and option, right? If you're very bullish, like you would take, instead of just buying one Bitcoin, like, as in going down and putting down the full notional and buying coin or token, you would then go in and buy a leveraged buy a future, right? Like, so you would say, look, the March future is, I have a view that it's going to go up. You can lever up 10 times, 5 times, depending on what exchange that you're talking about. But of course, it's unlimited downside, right? Very simply, it goes down 20%, you're wiped out. Right, like if it's 5 times leverage, right? That's very simple. I mean, it's a leverage, good leverage, and if it goes up, great, right? You make 100%. If you buy an option, you can only lose the premium. So you really are like it's a protected strategy, but it's also a very leveraged strategy. Like, I mean, if it doesn't pay out, then you lose like whatever money that you put in. The way like people should use us, if you're a retail investor and not a market maker, is they should come in and say, look, I'm willing to spend this amount of premium and I have a leveraged view that this is going to happen in this range, right? They spend that premium, they forget about it, they put it in a drawer, right? If it pays out, great. If it doesn't pay out, you just lost that small amount of premium, right? So I think actually if people used options more, there would be less of the case of, massive blow-offs, massive liquidations, etc., right? People just need to go in and buy more.
Yeah. But it does seem like it's tough, right? For the average, I mean, you're in Hong Kong and probably don't deal with any American citizens that are looking to buy options. I know in America, it's very restrictive and there's lots of different, institutional sort of red tape versus retail red tape. So is there, how can just kind of normal people buy options, I guess, restricting those jurisdictions,
Yeah, I mean, it's actually quite tough, right? Like, so, I would say a significant portion of our client base, out of the U.S., has a company, right? Like, which trades out of, like Cayman or BVI or et cetera. The majority of the options flow happens in the overlap between London and, New York, right? In that window. Right. And it's a global marketplace with the US players generally being restricted to trading out of a company. Right. So unfortunately, it is just a tough place for US investors to trade. And if you do trade, you generally trade on CME or a very regulated exchange. Right. The rest of the world is just not as regulated on options.
Do you view are you from the optimistic kind of viewpoint of like, DeFi and crypto are going to kind of break down those barriers to make financial products more accessible to everyone? Or do you think, that's all, well and good, but it's never going to happen. Let's just reinforce more of the same.
Yeah. So look, DeFi is here to stay, I think. I think if the, like, for institutional players, I think there will come a time when you will have something called a KYC'd DeFi, right? Where you are, you're welcome to use your MetaMask, you're welcome to use your wallet, right? But then you have to have some kind of proof that you are not, you know, laundering money or committing some kind of, you know, you have some kind of sign off from regulators that you are allowed to use that, right? I think that's going to happen. I think for retail, I really think it is a true decentralized, you know, world, right? Like they're able to trade, you know, as they wish using their wallet. I mean, obviously, I would encourage people not to, you know, get involved in anything like Tornado or like anything which has like a high regulatory like scrutiny. But like, I think there are many options protocols out there, like, you know, like Ribbon Finance, etc., where people are constantly, you know, selling covered calls, etc., which, you know, like people are, like retail will be able to trade, you know, in most places. It'll be actually up to the DeFi protocol to stop jurisdictional, you know, like retail from getting involved, which I think is also quite difficult to enforce. But I think on the retail side, it won't be as rigorous as it used to be. But I think DeFi is here to stay.
That's great to know. How has the crypto options market matured over the past couple of years? I know we're still very much in the infancy from the DeFi perspective. What about just the centralized major players adopting crypto in their own platforms?
Yeah, so depending on who you ask, the options market has grown aggressively, but not as so. Roughly speaking, somewhere between $1 to $2 billion goes through on a good day of options. The bulk of this is exchange cleared. You know, the things that Paradigm is involved in, you know, we do about 40% of that. The rest happens, you know, bilaterally between, you know, between institutions or, you know, like, you know, sometimes in the DeFi space. But we are also generally involved in that space. But I would say about $1 to $2 billion. Now this compares, you know, like this is about, let's say, 3% of, what is happening in the spot market, right? Which is a very low number, right? Because the thing in crypto is that people feel like, let's say you are gambling or you're taking a view or you're taking leverage on, you know, crypto. People feel like they get what they want by just owning a token, right? Because that token could double, it could go 100x, you know, etc. Right? They feel like that's the leverage. In traditional finance, people use that because, you know, like the actual underlying market doesn't move that much. It moves like 1% a day, like equities, et cetera, right? So people use options a lot more, right? What I think is going to happen is, and we have seen an exponential growth in options so far, but we'll see an even bigger exponential growth as Bitcoin and Ether and the major coins kind of stabilize, right? As they become a better store of value, they become more less volatile. We'll see more people use options, right? Because, like,
it makes sense.
Yeah, like it's just like you want to get that return, right? But you're not able to because it's just so stable. A classic example is in the last couple of months, you know, even after FTX, like, you know, the market for major coins was very stable, like very, very stable. Like Ether, you know, basically didn't move for like almost 2 months. That's actually what happens in traditional finance for a very long time. I mean, the market just doesn't move. And then people come in and either, you know, I'm like, oh, I have some Ether, so I'll sell a covered call against it. If it goes up too much, I'll sell it, right? Or it'll be a guy being like, oh, I think it's going to roof it, so I'm going to go buy it, right? And then it just makes the market. So I think the market stabilizes from here, and the options market becomes a much bigger percentage of the overall market.
Fascinating. And I really do want to get your take on the FTX collapse. You know, I'll keep it open-ended. From your vantage point, just walk us through kind of what you think went wrong, what kind of was going through your mind during that time, and how the industry really does move forward from having a really key actor in the space just completely find out where they're fraudulent.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, there's a lot of data out there, right, on FTX. I mean, we had a partnership with them on future spreads. So, you know, I've talked a lot about options, but we also do, you know, spot versus future on our platform, where you can do that as a package, right? That's deemed as a complex derivative, and then you can trade that as, one click. Yeah, you can trade that, right? So when interest rates were 20% in crypto, you know, that was a great product, and we would clear that on the underlying exchange. We have a few exchanges. FTX was one of them. Right. So, you know, they were a partner to us, you know, before that. We just launched it and it was growing exponentially. In terms of it clearly is a Enron plus Lehman type moment for crypto. My main takeaway from all this is now it's difficult to trust one exchange with your money, right? Like, yeah. It's just difficult, right? Like, you know, like I have no like you know insight into you know like which exchange is the best, but I would just never put too much concentration risk on one exchange, right? So, like one of the key things that we are always talking about is that we're non-custodial, but we deal with every exchange, right? Like we deal with like multiple exchanges, right? I think more mm-hmm. people like us will emerge who are multi-exchange, you know, like trading platforms or, you know, like ways to access multiple exchanges. So like, I actually think the real takeaway from FTX, right, which, you know, is not insightful on what went wrong, but it tells you that if like that's one, something could go wrong, right? Either there could be fraud, right? There could be some kind of regulatory scrutiny, right? There could be you know, there could be just an outright credit risk associated with an exchange, like, you know, maybe they lend out the money too much, or it could be something like you just don't want your money on exchange and you want your money in DeFi, right? Like in a smart contract, non-custodial fashion, right? So if you look at this, I think what the end result of FTX is that nobody can ever say, oh my God, I lost 50% of my net worth or 80% of my net worth on an exchange going down. It doesn't matter how good an exchange is or how good a protocol is, you're always going to diversify. So I reckon people are literally going to be like in the next, like in a year from now, if there's a major exchange going down, people will be like, oh, I lost 10%, right? Because it was a top exchange, but I can't, the trust is no longer there, right? So I have to diversify.
Right.
So I actually think people will come out and say, classify things by risk. So they'll say, look, you know, right now there are two exchanges which are really at the top of their game, extremely liquid. Before, it would be 50% of my money in one and 50% in another. No, that's not going to happen. It's going to be, you know, 10% in that one, 10% in the other one, and then 10% in some, you know, hot wallet, some, you know, maybe some DeFi protocol. And then people will just start diversifying across DeFi and CeFi. And like DeFi has its own risk, right? Like you have smart contract risk, you have rug risk, etc. But then everyone is like, well, that's the risk I take, but you know, there's only 10%, right? So I think for me, the main thing is FTX taught you the value of diversification. I mean, it's a very hard lesson, right? But it tells you that, yeah, there are no like safe, you know, bank type, you know, institutions. You really have to diversify.
Yeah, I think that's the best advice and the best way to look at all that. You know, there's so many people that are trying to point fingers, whether it's at Gary Gensler or people who have been hurt in this space saying, you know, they should have known, they should have seen something. But, you know, as a partner of FTX, was there any indicator at all that anything was wrong before it was way too late?
No. There definitely, you know, like there definitely wasn't, you know, from our side. We wouldn't know, right? Like, because we, in a way, we were like a non-custodial partner, right? So we would just, like, when people trade by us, they have to have money on exchange, on FTX. So we are just a trade facilitation mechanism. We definitely didn't have any insights into it. We were the same as everyone else. Obviously, you know, like, we suffered less than everyone else because they were a partner. They were not somebody we, you know, like we had funds with, et cetera. Right. So, you know, we were in a, perhaps in a, you know, a position to be like sympathetic towards the rest of the world. But, yeah, we definitely did not have any insights, and, you know, we were learning most of it from Twitter as it was happening.
Yeah, no, I think there was a lot of funds that were carried out because they did trust FTX. And I think that at the end of the day, it's a great reminder for why we're all here at the, you know, it's for the sovereignty, for the non-custodial aspects of, you know, digital bearer instruments that, you know, you might as well take advantage of those attributes. If that's, you know, why you're here, don't get caught up in all the marketing hype and the ease of use on a centralized exchange and all that stuff. But I kind of want to talk about, you know, on the back of this FTX debacle, right? You mentioned Bitcoin's kind of held up surprisingly well. It sold off for about 2 months, maybe, right? Stayed pretty low, and just had a really, really, really sharp start to 2023. I mean, you mentioned at the beginning that you were starting to get bullish and that this might, you know, in the near term have a little bit of continuation. And I kind of want to pick your brain on that thought right there. What's leading into this thesis that you've got? And is it any certain, you know, options data or indicators that you're looking at? Is it just a general feeling?
Yeah. So, look, we are like a marketplace. So we get to see a lot of flow that happens in the market. We have a number of you know, like podcasts or publications which talk about, you know, what flows we see on our Twitter. But I think the main thing is that you know, like crypto has suffered massively last year, right? We had you know, like Luna. There's a lot of stuff happened. Luna, Celsius, FTX, and the Fed coming in and, you know, hiking rates aggressively, right? So you have all of these things happen, and, you know, like major coins were down, I don't know, like 75%. If you talk about BTC and ETH, and if you're talking about something in the DeFi space, I mean, that probably is 95% down, right? So how much worse could it get on the major coins? That's the first view that I'm taking, which is not particularly scientific. Right. The second thing is I feel because we're in the option space, we have information about what is probability adjusted a good trade, right? It's not that we think, you know, like, you know, like I am bullish, right? I am bullish. Would I bet my house that it's going to go up? No. But would I buy a leverage payout that it's going to go up? Yes, I would. Right? Like it's a different view. It's not like, like 2021 where it looked like it was just on a straight handle up. I would use a future to express my view, right? Because it was definitely going up. Now I think there's a high probability it goes up, but I would only bet premium. Right, so which is why I keep talking about options and call spreads and stuff like that. I would definitely say in the market we have seen people have a very similar view to me, which is, look, if it goes up, it's going to roof it because many things could go in your favor, right? FTX, you know, perhaps recovery comes in extremely high, right? There's a chance, right? There's a chance that the Fed, you know, like inflation is now under control. The Fed comes in and starts easing, you know, quicker than expected, right? I think the hurdle for them to, you know, like be hawkish, it's quite high, right? So either of these things could result in a roof of all risky assets, not just crypto. The third thing is, you know, I do have some view that perhaps the Russia-Ukraine war is reaching the final stages, and there might be some sort of negotiation, because a significant portion of the leverage, you know, that was there for Russia with energy is kind of disappearing into summer, and now Europe has diversified. It looks like there is a decent chance that there could be a resolution, and I'm not entirely sure the market's pricing. I mean, people are just pricing rhetoric and saying it's going to go on forever. So anyway, all of these things are a potential roofing, catalyst. Yeah.
And I'd also like to get your perspective on number four, which would be China's reopening. And you're over in Hong Kong, and that's what a lot of people in the mainstream media are starting to talk about, that China reopening from restricting or from all of its restricted COVID policies. Is this actually true? Is this happening? And is that kind of going to help asset prices?
For sure, right? So for sure, right? I mean, that is... I would say that one is maybe priced in a little bit because people, I think you can see in the equity market that people have, priced that China's opening up. So I live in Hong Kong, right? And Hong Kong is kind of a test area for mainland China to try out new policies. So the quarantine was lifted here about a month before it was lifted in China. The energy is materially different. Like people are going on holiday. They haven't been let out of, places for a long time. People are just the economy in a way is booming because suddenly F&B is back, people are going holiday, it's moving back towards a sensible a pre-COVID society. Of course, this comes with a short-term pain because it's not somewhere which had a lot of COVID cases before. So you'll basically have to suffer through that for a while, which I guess most other countries, suffered through, maybe a couple of years ago. But it is extremely good news. I mean, I can just tell you anecdotally, the energy in Hong Kong, not just in crypto, but in everything is palpable, right? Like people are like, well, now we're back. Let's go back to how we were 2 years ago. Let's just build and see what happens.
That's really exciting to hear. I haven't had a chance to make my way to Hong Kong to visit other than a quick transit, but I know so many people over there now, and there's events actually starting to get booked over there. So that's exciting to hear. But I had a question while I was listening to all the different things that you were talking about. What does the term priced in actually mean?
Yeah, so so priced in, basically, you mean the textbook definition of it, right? Is that what you mean, or...? Let's say an economic event happens, right? Like China opening up, the market basically says, look, this is going to cause a 20% rally in Chinese stocks, because that's how much opening up will return to the market, right? So priced in just basically means that somebody's already taken into account what's going to happen in the future from China opening up. So that's priced into the asset already, right? In most cases, when people say priced in, they just mean, look, people have understood that, things are going to be easier. So the market's going to go up. Therefore, equities are up, right?
So if you're just getting the news right now, you're late. Like the market's already moved.
Yeah, exactly. Well, the news jump in early. So basically, people have priced in the fact that China's opening up because they announced it a few weeks ago, and the market's adjusted. And now, if you trade on it, you are probably too late. That's kind of what I mean. And I think that's what priced in means. Yeah.
Yeah. There's lots of conversation, actually, kind of on that topic. The halving, right? Is the halving priced in or is it not priced in? There's always that sort of conversation that happens just about every 4 years. We don't need to kind of go into that, but unless you have a strong opinion
I don't. I definitely feel that, there are many forces which are pushing to the top side, right? Like there are many pushing, crypto to the top side. Any of these could be, a real game changer, to the amount, because you got to remember we're down 75%, right? Like in the major coins, right? I mean, from here, right, for there to be an uptick, any of these stories, they don't even need to be true stories. They just looks like there'll be hope. And then, the market could easily adjust. I don't have a strong view on that. I'm just saying that could also be another factor.
Yeah. Now over here, we're really bullish as well. We also believe there's a lot of upside potential. No financial advice from any one of us or you for that matter. But if we wanted to make some kind of a levered bet that matures, let's say, just a year from now as a random anecdotal example, not an actual strategy, should I use a future or an option to accomplish this? You know, which would give me the less fees? Or what are kind of like the differences in these products?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually just looking it up now in terms of like what I would, you know, what I would, you know, do. You know, like if you wanted to bet towards the end of this year, what I would do is something like the 31st of December. It's a you know, established contract. I realize many Americans won't be able to deal on this, but like some exchanges like Deribit, Bybit, etc., they offer these options contracts a 2,000, 3,000 call spread on Ether costs about 10%. Right, so that basically means you know, at maturity, you're making something like 33%, roughly, right? And you're spending 10% for that, right? And it's a year, right? It's December 31st, so that's a 3.5 to 1 bet. I like simple trades like that, right? Because it's you know, while it's like, if you do short term bets, you can make like levered payouts, 7 to 1, 10 to 1, that sort of stuff. But this is more like a, look, if it's going to go up, right, it just has to retrace half of where we were, you know, in 2021, right, in December 2021, right? We just need to go halfway, right? And I think that's a very nice bet. In terms of futures versus options, I am still a little bit scared, right? I mean, there are still many tail risks out there. I'm bullish, but I don't want to commit too much capital, so I would love to use options, right, when I'm expressing my view. So I would do something similar to that.
Interesting. And, you know, when I think about options as well, sometimes it's just a good way to get kind of portfolio insurance. Whereas, you know, instead of like, if I think about it, you know, you hold a portfolio of Bitcoin, Ether, and a few altcoins, you already got a super, super high risk portfolio. No need to lever up. Maybe just buy put options every year or every quarter or something out of the money. Do you guys see clients doing that?
Yes, 100%. Yes, we do. We do 100% see clients doing that. Look, I focus very much on the, you know, the positive side, like the bullish expression. But this is also a very sensible strategy because actually your view is not that different, right? Like, because all you're doing is you're saying, I'm bullish, but if the worst happens, I want to be protected, mm-hmm. right? So there are a lot of people who come in and buy deep out of the money puts, right? And they express it in a very simple way. I pay the premium and I put it away. Worst comes to worst, it'll pay out, right? Worst comes to worst, it'll protect my portfolio from having too much of a shock. So, but the attitude is very similar. It's always like, let me buy something and it's either a bullish bet, bearish bet, but I'm going to put it in a drawer and I'm going to wait for it to expire. I think people don't use that as often in their risk management strategy. Everyone is looking to basically lever up and, you know, like get rich or die trying, right? Like, while actually the right strategy should always be, look, I have 50% certainty, therefore I will only bet this amount of money, right? Or I want this amount of tail risk protection, so I'll bet this amount of money. So paying premium, I think, is a much more sensible route.
Love it. Let's take a look in the future here for Paradigm. Are you guys always going to be a centralized sort of institution, or do you guys ever have a plan to DAOify or to decentralize and kind of issue your own token and you know, kind of be governed by DeFi?
Yeah, I mean, we definitely have ambitions in that space. So, I mean, we've talked about the CeFi side, but we are integrated with, you know, some of the, you know, protocols, DeFi protocols. We run the auctions for them, right? We definitely have ambitions in that direction. I think we'll, you know, I can give you more color as things firm up. But I would say our ethos has always been a very DeFi ethos, which is, I don't want to touch your money. Right, it's a very non-custodial. Right. I will get you the best price, but I don't want to touch your assets. Right, so it's very conducive to, you know, being a DeFi protocol. However, there's still many advantages to being, you know, covering both DeFi and CeFi. Right, because in a way, right now, like if you think about that diversification example I gave you, you would still like you don't just want one entity, right? Like you don't want to have just one. you know, one clearing venue. You want to be everywhere, right? You want to be on top of everyone, right? So I would think that, you know, like the combination of CeFi and DeFi is probably where we should be sitting. But yes, we do have some ambitions in the DeFi space, and you know, I'll keep you updated as this develops.
I want to ask a couple more questions while we still have you. Real quick, I mean, Genesis filing for bankruptcy, you know, just days ago. What's your take on that? Again, this is like nobody could have really seen it coming, but they were some of the biggest traders, at least in the States for sure. Is this just, you know, par for the course in a big kind of washout? You expect lots of leveraged lenders to go out, or did this one cut you off guard?
No, I think this was, you know, this was predicted, right? Like, as in that, you know, there's a lot of market chatter about this for a while. Mm-hmm. You know, like the question was whether it was DCG or Genesis, you know, who was, you know, going to file, etc. The market side is, you know, is a completely siloed. So the derivatives market side is a siloed entity, right? So they're not affected by this. In terms of like whether like this lender will lead to a washout of trades, I feel the market has adjusted post FTX, right? Like the market is, you know, like a lot more. Yeah, positioned for this. Like, let's say you had uncollateralized loans, or you know, you start marking it at a price which is sensible, right? Like, nobody after FTX is marking anything with, you know, like either FTX credit risk or Genesis credit risk at 100 anymore, right? And no loan is going to be marked at 100. Like, people have, I mean, if you didn't, then that would probably be classed as fraud, right? So I think people have already adjusted to that, but I think it's important to note that the derivative side is definitely not the same, right? Mm-hmm. It's a different entity, and I would definitely say that the number of you know, like players in the derivative space suggests that I don't think this will be a massive game changer for the derivatives market, right? This particular bankruptcy. I mean, obviously FTX was a massive thing, but now I don't think this will, like, it's not like tomorrow liquidity will go to zero. I think you know, liquidity will stay stable, and you know, as you can see from the market, in fact, market is actually pretty much unchanged from when the news was announced. It's actually went up and went down in spot, mm-hmm. right? So I think it's very priced in, is my view.
Interesting.
Yes.
Does the pricing and activity on an options book give out any kind of actionable insights for the spot market if people are trying to cover themselves more recently versus, you know, some really big spike predictions? Is there anything that we can look at the options market and read, or things that we should look for?
Yeah. Because the options market is still a small percentage of the total, you know, spot and derivatives market, I would say it doesn't give you insights into, it's not like a predictor of what's going to happen in spot, but it can tell you the distribution of, you know, of risk, right? And the distribution of risk is definitely changed from, it's called the skew, right? So it's basically like which side people are betting on, right? The first thing is that the skew to the top side, i.e. for calls, is materially increased. So it's people before were like, well, it is going to go up. It's going to go up. It's going to go up a bit, and then it's going to, you know, like, that'll be it. Now people are pricing, oh, this could really roof, right? This could really roof. Yeah, I mean,
I'm going to incorporate that.
Yeah. I mean, I think the distribution has a bit more of a tail. I think in most sense, the options market is not a indicator of, you know, of, it's more like an insurance premium indicator rather than a prophecy, like, of what's going to happen in the spot market.
Love it. Well, while we still have you, who else out there, what other companies are you building with, or maybe you're not even partnered with them and you just are really impressed by their technology. What's one other crypto firm out there that has really caught your eye?
Yeah. We have really liked these DeFi option vaults, you know, that have come into existence. And, we are very close with them. Most of them run their auctions through us, the largest ones for sure. We think that's a new source of option volatility, right, in the market, because, you know, everything here that we've talked about is about somebody buying an option, right? And I'm very much focused on, like, the audience that I guess you guys have, which is, you know, like, you know, somebody who wants to protect themselves or somebody wants to express a view. Now, there's a very sophisticated universe of people who are, you know, make their living by selling options, which are market makers and institutional players, etc. Right. But there is actually a very simple person who should be selling options as well, which is somebody who is extremely long a crypto, right? Like, let's say Ether or Bitcoin, and then just says, look, if spot rallies 20%, I'm okay to take profit at that level, right? Because you're just like, well, if it goes up, I was going to sell it anyway. So why not sell a call at, you know, 120% of spot, right? So these option vaults do that super well, right? So, you know, for example, like, I was long some Ether. I put it in this option vault and they kept selling every week. They would come in and sell 20% out of the money call. One day I got exercised, right? And I was like, well, do I care? No, because my spot is up 20%. I could have made 30%, but, you know, I made some yield and I've got 20%, right? So in the end, I made it 21%. Right? I was like, all right, I'm okay with that.
It's so we're tool
very
in the
big fans of that. Yeah, it's completely DeFi, non-custodial, all stuff we like to hear, and we run the auction for them. So that's I would say that's one thing. The second thing is I find that people have forgotten the world where, like, spot and future, like, you know, the difference between, we call it future spreads. So we call it future spreads in our platform, but it's basically the carry trade, cash and carry, right? So this trade is coming back for sure, right? Back in one form or the other. People want to use leverage to express their view in futures, and so spot and future can, you know, diverge. We have created a marketplace for you to trade that as an asset on multiple exchanges. And we've just launched with, that's what we had with FTX, and that's what we will have with a few other exchanges, notably Bybit. We think that's going to be a very exciting space because, one of the main reasons why people trade crypto is that once in a while, you'll get an opportunity to make 10% risk-free, right? By just buying the token and then selling the future and just basically running that as a carry trade. The only risk you run is like the credit risk associated with that exchange on which you run it. I think that's something we are very interested in, and that space is something we're very interested in. In general, we have a good dialogue with all CFI exchanges, but in terms of product, I would say those are the most interesting for us.
Incredible. Well, Sohan, thank you so much for your time today here joining us at the Crypto 101 podcast. I hope we could have you back on sometime here in the near future when the crypto markets are hopefully rip-roaring, and we'll see what the futures market and the options market is telling us then. But until then, enjoy yourself, and we'll see you on the other side.
All right. Yeah. Thanks for having me.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.